I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Teddy Sheringham, everlasting striker and treble-winning hero. Across a career of 25 years, Teddy played for Millwall, Forest, Spurs, United, Spurs again, West Ham, Portsmouth and Colchester. 51 caps for England, turned the 99 Champions League final on its head, performed as a singing tree on ITV's The Masked Singer, plus author. And today we're reading his 1999 autobiography, Teddy. But what will the book club and special guest journalist Charlie Eccleshare think of it? Find out in today's Football Book Club.
He says, I can call to mind literally dozens of situations, which just isn't that many situations.
I'm now going to explain in detail this friendly match between England and Morocco.
There is so much thinly veiled hatred of Michael Owen in this. Oh. It's incredible.
Silly, childish, pointless, even worse, dangerous. I plead guilty to all four.
Hello and welcome to Football Book Club, the only book club where, instead of literary classics, each episode we read another footballer's autobiography. Less Agatha Christie, more Malcolm Christie.
That's a good one.
I was wondering, have we had that before?
I don't think we have had that before, but I think that's a good one.
I think it's quite a good one as well. Charlie, verdict?
It is good. My only gripe would be Agatha Christie wasn't a sort of autobiographical.
Charlie, you can't start splitting hairs like this. Oh,
well,
man.
You know, we're not doing football cliches at the moment, so I need an outlet for all this pedantry. you've opened the door then, and I've walked straight through it.
Well, we have
expect a lot more of that.
Okay, that's good to know. Daniel Jolly, specifically, who sent that in, he opened the door, so thanks a lot, Daniel. I'm James Bug, and over the weeks we'll be reading such classics as Les Ferdinand, Sir Les, and Lee Yun Pyo's Success Is Not a Success, The Failure Is Not a Failure.
We are not reading that.
No, we are not. That's a very loose translation of Korean, so whether that's accurate, who knows. But today we are reading Teddy Sheringham's 1999 classic, Teddy, My Autobiography, and joining me to read it are Jack Bernhardt.
Hello.
And please welcome to the show, journalist, author, star of Football Clichés and View from the Lane podcast, and Tottenham Hotspur correspondent at The Athletic, Charlie Eccleshare.
Woo!
Hi guys, how are you doing?
Hello.
Very, very good. How are you?
Yeah, very well, thanks. I'm looking forward to this. It was quite a journey reading this book.
Yeah. That is the diplomatic answer. I enjoy. Yeah. Thank you. All of our guests, they can go one of two ways. They can immediately insult us and say, why have you made us do this? Or they can say what you said, and I appreciate that.
Yeah, are you a big fan of autobiographies, Charlie?
I do. I find them hard to read now, not in a kind of Partridge, piss-takey kind of way, especially these football ones. I read Alan Sugar's autobiography a few years ago. I don't know if you've done it on this podcast.
No, we have.
I would strongly recommend it. I think you would have a lot of fun with it.
Is very football-heavy enough?
Yeah.
That's a good point. I mean, you might have to focus on the sort of Spurs chapters, but there's absolute gold in there. Just like the maddest non sequiturs you'll ever hear. Sort of name dropping, a lot of needless to say, I had the last laugh.
Okay, very good.
Brilliant. Yeah, okay, that's what we need. That's what we always look for. Because, I mean, this book talks a lot about Alan Sugar and, like, also.
Yeah.
You've got the other side.
Neil Ruddock's book as well. So and Ginola's book talks about Sugar. So it would be good to sort of get the.
Get his side of things.
It feels like he's the sort of missing link to quite a lot of. I'm trying, if there's a similar figure in literary. It's almost like reading the Aeneid, you know? Like you're finally getting Aeneas's perspective.
Wow, this is too highbrow. Already, this is too highbrow. I want to know if Alan Sugar's got a chapter in his autobiography, which the bit which Teddy mentions, where he wanders into a meeting wielding a baseball bat.
Yeah, do you know what? I interviewed Lord Sugar for a piece on sort of Tottenham, the Sugar
Lord
years.
Sugar?
Lord Sugar, yeah, a few years ago, Sir Alan. I don't remember that coming up, though I do remember him not being too complimentary about Teddy Sheringham. And so it's interesting that clearly it was felt on both sides. I mean, Teddy's very much a Venables loyalist.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think you kind of had to pick sides. And it's interesting you mentioned Razor Ruddock, because obviously he appears in this Teddy book. So it's all... it's all kind of interlinked, isn't it?
Very much. I mean, Ruddock had a big chapter on the protest that him and his wife, I think, staged.
Yeah. And I like how Teddy was like, look, I like Venables, but that was too much. that was kind of embarrassing.
Chill out, Neil. Yeah. So I gave you a few options for Spurs books. You didn't want to do Anderson's book too much, I seem to remember, because Posse, you're a little bit chummy, so I'm guessing no plans to befriend Teddy Sheringham anytime
well,
soon.
Not for want of trying on my part, but he's resolutely ignored me, whereas Darren Anderson's a lovely man who I've spoken to many times, so I just had to declare that conflict of interest.
That's fair.
He's also my
favourite
ever
player. Maybe this will draw Teddy out. Maybe he'll listen and love the analysis of his autobiography so much he'll return my calls.
I don't know if he will.
I've got a big head of Darren Anderson on my table.
I was literally about to say.
He's my favourite ever Tottenham player. So there we go.
He's honestly the loveliest man as well.
That's good to hear.
He seems like a good guy. Yeah. I'm an Arsenal fan and even I think he seems like a nice guy.
Yeah, he really is.
Why is he called Shaggy?
I think it's hair. The hair.
Yeah.
Right, okay. It's not because he would go around singing Mr. Bombastic, no?
I think it's more Shaggy from Scooby-Doo, right? I'm assuming. Yeah, right, it's that kind of floppiness. The OG Shaggy. Of course. But anyway, today we're reading Teddy Sheringham's book on the show. It was originally written in 1998, this one. I don't know why. After a really like disappointing year for
Bonkers
Man United,
decision.
And then a rubbish World Cup. Basically just to like piss off Alan Sugar, I think, who said like, you can't write about this, and then does. But then I've got the revised edition. I don't know if everyone else has. With the Champions League final. Oh, he must have been, not just because he won it, but he must have been pretty relieved to finally add a decent chapter to this book and end it the proper way.
I argue that like if you didn't have that chapter in this book would be entirely useless. Like,
yeah.
Surely, who was buying this book before he won the Champions League? No offense to Teddy Sheringham.
No, it's a good point as well because he just left Spurs a year earlier. So it would have made more sense almost to do it whilst a hero at Spurs and then all the Spurs fans are going to buy it. I imagine he'd sort of burnt some bridges there.
Mm-hmm.
I've just noticed this, but because the foreword by Terry Venables is also quite entertaining.
Yes.
But he uses a phrase, he says, I can call to mind literally dozens of situations, which just isn't that many situations. It's quite a funny... And then Sheringham uses it similarly. He says something, I don't know if it's literally dozens, but he's like, genuinely, there were dozens of people or something like that. It's a really like modest claim.
Yeah. I could count on the fingers of one hand.
Yeah, exactly.
and in my opinion, that's a lot.
So let's get into it. Let's read Teddy Sheringham's Teddy. Over the show, we're going to get to know Teddy and we're going to know our guest, Charlie. Of course, there's a quiz and our friend Ken Zong is back with another chant. But first, let us see what Amazon is saying. The book has 3.5 stars from 122 ratings, including this. I know, it's a lot and... like
that's a lot and it's low.
Yeah, for the ones that we do. Including this three-star review from T. Thornton, entitled Three Stars, Unnecessary, which reads, did he really call Hoddle a c***? it says four asterisks is what it actually says.
I have to say, I was wondering that because there is a passage from another book where he supposedly did, but I don't know if that's real. I remember, I think it was Sid Lambert linked to it on Twitter years ago.
Okay.
That there's a passage from another book, it's not his autobiography,
mm-hmm.
where, and there's a bit that's very similar in this book. In that book, supposedly Sheringham says something along the lines of, I always grew up idolizing Hoddle. I loved him as a player.
Yep.
And then when I met him, I just thought, oh my God, what a C word. I can't believe it.
Oh, wow.
So I think that's what that's a reference to.
Oh, maybe that was in the original version.
Is there another Teddy Sheringham? Like, or is that like, a kid's book? And he was like, hey, kids, just.
No, it's in one of those books that's like a. The Beautiful Game, the birth of the Premier League or something, that sort of thing. And it was it comes at you completely out of nowhere. I've got it, actually. I'll dig it out.
Oh, please do. That's
really cool.
Wow. I did wonder that. I just thought, well, just read the book, T. Thornton. You'll find out. And this thing, he doesn't. He's actually quite complimentary about Holland.
Yeah,
he is.
He says he's basically growing up, he idolized him, it sounds like. And
I wonder if that's a thing that happened later, because it does feel like.
Yeah, I think so.
It does feel like, I suppose, he's on the way to revising his opinion about Hoddle with this. And it feels like maybe he's years later, he's like, he really wasted me for England.
I mean, that's spot on. I think he's a couple of substitute appearances away from that.
Yeah. I mean, Teddy's famously a man who will revise what football team he supports, whoever he's signing for. So,
That, I mean, we'll get into that. But that was, I found that aspect of it fascinating. I do want to chat about that.
Shall I read out this? I found this
extra. Yeah, please do. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. But the picture I've got of it doesn't reveal what book it is, but I can probably find it out. It says, when I was a 14-year-old playing for Tottenham Schoolboys, I used to get to those first team games early so that I could watch Hoddle warm up. He was so graceful. The ball would come over and he would catch it on his back, knock it up and volley it back where it came from. Everything he did was so classy. I couldn't wait to watch him play. Then when I met him man to man, it was, oh my God, what a I can't believe this.
Wow.
Incredible.
Oh my God.
Blimey.
Why would you say that?
Maybe that's his foreword to Glenn Hoddle's book.
It just comes out of nowhere.
Wow.
That's amazing.
God.
We're trying to find out where that's actually from.
It
was tweeted a number of years ago.
Oh my word. There's nothing like that in this book. It's quite a mild book.
No, this
is I mean,
That's what T. Thornton thinks of the book, and that's what Teddy thinks of Glenn Hoddle. But what did you guys think of Teddy by Teddy?
I mean, it's pretty formulaic, but because I don't read many of these, I found it very funny, almost. For that, there are lots of little things I love. Some is so straight off the bat, there's kind of casual xenophobia when talking about Bayern Munich. Describes them as we were 1-0 down to the arrogant Germans who confronted us, which does sound a little bit kind of, you know, raised on a diet of, you know, we won two world wars against
it's very much like wearing that t-shirt at the airport walking around
which is a recurring theme throughout the book.
There's quite a lot of that. He talks about something coldly logical football. Which again, I don't know, it's just kind of like Bond villainy.
It's so weird because he's like, they usually play coldly logical football, but this time they were playing like Wimbledon. Also, they were showboating. So you can never quite decide what like evil version of football he hates here. It's very odd.
And he talks about the self-satisfied smirk had already left their faces.
Also, who's smirking during a Champions League final? It's just, baffling. Yeah.
So, I sort of like that. There, you know, as much as he doesn't really put the boot into anyone, apart from maybe Alan Sugar, he does seem to have quite a few axes to grind, which I really enjoyed. My favorite bit also, or possibly my favorite bit, comes quite early. he talks about how Arsenal fans chanted him, "Old Teddy, went to Man United and he won F all."
Yeah.
And he says, "It was great to prove what complete rubbish that was by the end of the campaign. Although I expect the morons who chant it will continue to do so. No one told this Teddy that at this point they did carry on, but they chanted, "Old Teddy, went to Man United and he's still a C word." That was actually how they amended that chant after he had stopped winning football.
He's still a Glenn Hoddle.
Exactly. But I love this because he actually uses the word, says, "I can live with it because I had the last laugh."
I know,
which is just amazing.
Absolutely incredible. It's a very, I know we say this almost every week, it's a very Partridge book, I would say, this one.
Exactly. I mean, that's just straight out of the Partridge playbook.
On that note, it is very funny how a few times in there, because this was written in 99, as we mentioned, where he'll say things like that about Spurs fans or Spurs, or he'll say "But things were said, I can never go back, I can never watch that." And then literally 2 years later, he returned to Tottenham.
I forgot about that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which, yeah.
Well, I'm back. Yeah. Remember all those things I said? I don't.
I'm trying to remember. I'm guessing, Charlie, you'll know some. I'm guessing Sugar had probably just about gone for Levy. Surely at that point,
gone.
Right?
Yes. He'd gone by then. So Sheringham went back in the summer of 2001. So he had gone sort of midway through the previous season.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Just another one of these sort of kind of gently stereotyping. And I'd love to know where he sort of got this idea from, but he says, every area in the world had its own way of playing the game, and the Saudis were a typical Arabian side.
Oh my god.
Speed, good technique, great on the ball, but perhaps lacking a bit in the finer points of teamwork. Firstly, I've never heard of like Arabian team. Yeah. It's quite a funny turn of phrase.
Your classic Arabian side.
But also this kind of fatal flaw of lacking in teamwork. That's those Arabians for you.
Yeah. I mean, it definitely has that edge to it, this book. Like, I mean, you're saying he doesn't put the boot into anyone. He doesn't, but there's a kind of like a sort of a thin veneer of aggression the whole way through that I can't quite like shake. Like, mm-hmm. he just like pointlessly mentioning things where you're like, like, again, needless to say, I had the last laugh and that kind of thing. There's a bit where he like says, oh, you know, Alan Sugar didn't want to, I know we'll talk more about Alan Sugar later, but where he was like, Alan Sugar, the type of thing that he would have done, it would have caused a lynch mob in the boardroom. Like, I mean, I don't think it would have caused a lynch mob in the boardroom. And also, why are you saying lynch mob?
Yeah.
Teddy, it's a football book.
Yeah.
Chill out.
There's also a thing that happens, and I'm sure this happens in all football books, I just find it quite funny now, is he'll sort of mention people by name who, obviously, there's no way he could possibly have known what their names at, you know, that he'd have remembered this. And obviously we all buy into this illusion, but he's talking about a game away at Georgia. He talks about, went past their goalkeeper Zoitsi after Murtaz Shalia failed with an attempted interception. I just love the idea that he's remembered that detail.
As he's going past, he's like, I'll check that. I made sure that I'll name check that guy. Yes, don't worry.
I also love, and maybe this was a talking point at the time, but on that theme of kind of picking arguments, he's talking about Les Ferdinand, who I kind of feel like Les Ferdinand was universally popular.
Yeah.
But he says, if you look back at the qualifying campaign, Ferdinand had several really good moments in various games. Don't let anybody tell you that he shouldn't have gotten to Glenn's final 22 for France.
Yeah.
As if people, maybe they were, and I don't remember that, but I don't feel like people would have felt really strongly that Les Ferdinand should have been, you know, fourth choice striker for France 98.
It wasn't like Walcott in 2006.
I don't think so.
It was, a very established Premier League striker. Getting
though off the back of a bad season, to be fair, in 97-98, he didn't score for ages.
Yeah, but he was also Sheringham's replacement, right?
Which Sheringham does have a bit of an axe to grind about that, because he's told that they wouldn't spend that much money on a striker of his age, and Jerry France is actually the manager at the time, gets quite a hard time from Teddy in this book.
Jerry Browse is described in the funniest way I've ever heard someone describe manager in these books. He says how do you describe it? He says something like, he can't stop whinging about everything that's going on in his life. It's like, oh.
He kept bringing his problems to us. How are you, Jerry? Oh, God, well.
Oh, you see, the bills. Cat's been ill the last week. Yeah. Oh, my God.
Do you know what, though? I've interviewed Jerry Francis before, and he's a lovely man, but I think he feels a bit underappreciated and undervalued for what he's done in the game. So I can sort of imagine that coming through to his players. And I think he had a bit of an uneasy relationship with Sugar, which Sheringham picks up on.
I'm going to give a really weird compliment to Jerry Francis. I watched some betting company video. It was about Tottenham, I think, supporting Man City in the in the run into the art when Arsenal almost won the league. And Jerry Francis was a terrific actor. Of all the actors I've seen in these things, Jerry Francis was very, very, very good. And I think actually Teddy and Darren Anston were both in the same video, actually, from memory. Right. But Jerry Francis really stood head and shoulders acting-wise above them. So
he has.
He's appreciated here.
I feel like he's got some link to that world. Like in the 70s, he was, I think, hanging out with all film stars and things like this. He lived this very glamorous. Yeah, he lived this very glamorous life. He was considered like a real pretty boy, which I know fans of my generation only know him for the kind of the receding mullet look.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
No, he was a proper Yeah, ladies' man, I think, back in the day.
Wow, okay.
That's fascinating.
There we go.
He sort of looks like... do you remember the Steve Coogan film about Philip Green?
Oh, yeah.
He sort of looks like Steve Coogan
Greed. Yeah.
That's sort of how... That's whenever I think of Joey France, I sort of see that.
That's a weird film. Anyway. Anyway. A strange film. Charlie, I wanted to ask you, did you find this book as interesting as I did? Well... briefly, for the within the context of the Harry Kane transfer saga, how similar Sheringham's situation is to Kane's throughout it.
That's an interesting parallel. Yeah, I mean, I'd say Spurs now compared to then are in a much better place. I mean, like they back then, you do get the sense that they really are going nowhere.
For
and
sure,
that was, I remember that at the time. It was like
same.
They were a real kind of mid-table outfit who kind of plodded along. I think more so than now. But yeah, that is a good, you know, I can definitely see those parallels. And I think some people hope that Kane will come back and do a Sheringham.
You know,
he might go away, can win everything elsewhere, and then come back and, you know, repair that relationship.
It's true, but Sheringham even himself says similar things to, because we read Ginola's book the other week with Rich, and I think Ginola also said some of the same things, how, you know, Sheringham's always saying Spurs are a sleeping giant. And if they were just to pump a bit more money in or build the team or fulfill the promises that I was given for a long time, then really Spurs, then I wouldn't have needed to move on because I didn't want to move on from the club. I think he says quite a few times, but he's like, especially after Ardiles is backed with 50 strikers and no defenders. And then Ardiles gets sacked and then Klinsmann leaves and Dumitrescu and Popescu leave and stuff. I think he gets a bit... it becomes very...
There definitely are parallels. That feeling that they... I guess as well, because Spurs, the feeling is they didn't capitalize when they had Pochettino and, you know, felt like they were really onto something. Though they got further, I guess, on that journey. Like Spurs, this iteration of Spurs, the kind of Shuggy years, never really even got to that point where they were nearly winning things.
Yeah, for sure.
They were just kind of so enmeshed in mediocrity.
Yeah. And actually Sheringham left during the period when we won the only trophy in the 90s, right? FA Cup in the beginning of the FA Cup.
He missed Spurs bookended.
He missed both trophies.
And he missed them both.
I mean, to be honest, he did win a treble.
If he had to choose between the Worthington Cup in 1999 or the treble, maybe he would go with the treble.
Yeah, because that was a funny thing, wasn't it? After he left, Spurs won a trophy before he did.
Yes.
Because obviously the Worthington Cup is the first trophy of that season.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Neither won anything in his first season away.
Yeah.
So. I seem to remember that was a bit of, you know, another stick to beat him with until he had the last laugh.
very briefly.
And then they had to change that chant. And they changed it well. I mean, I found it really weird as not a Spurs fan.
Yeah.
I found it really weird because I thought it was going to be a lot of like, I didn't want to leave and it was a wrench to leave. And oh my God, and you know, I went to Man United. And I know this book is written when he's at Man United. But even when he's at other clubs or when he's at... Spurs, there does seem to be a thing of it where it's like when we're at Man United, oh my God, what a place it is to play at Man United. Oh, I loved playing at Man United. I can't believe that I would be playing there someday. But when he talks about Spurs, he's like, yeah, it's fine playing at Spurs. I don't really mind that. I associate him so strongly with Spurs, obviously. It felt very like, as a Spurs fan, I imagine reading it, you'd be a bit like, what about us though, man? What about our good times together? No?
I don't know. What do you think, Charlie, on that? I know how I feel, but I'm...
I think he tries to give the impression that, you know, he loved them and he did all he could, but it was just too... You know, he wanted to stay. I think he kind of reiterates that. I mean, those supposed contract negotiations are quite weird where he wants 5 years, then he's offered 4, but then because he doesn't respond quickly enough, Lord Sugar supposedly brings that down to 3.
Yeah.
Then he's sort of like, are you serious? And Sugar's like, well, what if I were to offer you 4 again?
And they kind he's of like, just, well, you're not. And he's like, well, okay, well, I won't. And then, he calls him up again and he's like, but would you like 4? Would you?
Yeah, like immediately after he puts the phone down, right?
Look, I don't doubt that Spurs were a mess at the time and that Sugar was going crazy and it was all nonsense. But like, I was still surprised. Like, the amount of fawning over Manchester United in every single iteration of Manchester United, like in the 80s when they're not particularly good.
Yeah, because when he's talking about Millwall, he's like, that was my first time I played against the great Manchester United.
They were not good in the late 80s.
He is employed by United at the time, though.
I know, but I still find it a bit... I mean, I know that, you know, you could only know... He wasn't to know that he was going to move in 2 years' time and all the rest of it, and that he'd be more closely associated with Spurs. But it does still feel odd to be so like, my team, United. Even before he moves there, if that makes sense.
I think he's all over Spurs, and I think he loves them. I think he's always saying in it, like, they're my... I was the best day of my life when I signed for Spurs. Actually, I think he's very complimentary about Spurs. However, I think this one sentence sums up kind of both our feelings, Jack, in one line. He said something like, by 4 p.m., I've got this written down, by 4 p.m., I had signed my life over to Tottenham Hotspur Football Club. It was the happiest day of my professional life to date.
crucially.
It's the first half of it just doesn't sound happy in the song. It sounds like
they're taking a life of servitude.
Yeah. I've never heard anyone say, I've signed my life over to the club.
he does also say,
yeah, yeah.
When I signed for Tottenham Hotspur in 1992, it was a fulfillment of a dream, albeit a romantic one. They were my team, the team in which my heroes have played. It was boys' own stuff. Not boys' own stuff.
It's like Ronan Keating and Stephen Gately.
And it was all to go tragically wrong. The classic story of the kid who grew up on the other side of the footballing tracks coming to play for the club that he had idolized as a youngster. Manchester United were different. They were a club that occupied a unique place in the universal community of football. It feels like he's kind of going like, yeah, Spurs are good. And like, I suppose I like Spurs because I grew up with them. But Man United, oh my God. I don't know. I'm surprised. I'm still surprised by it.
Importantly, Jack and Charlie, just so you know, Jack is an Arsenal fan. Teddy does really go out of his way to say Spurs are still, he thinks, by far the biggest team in London.
Yeah. The glamour club.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know. It still feels like a lie to me.
there are some good second mentions with us as well. He talks about the boys from Highbury.
Yeah.
And
there's a inverted commas gooners, which I quite enjoyed as well.
There was a bit when he said, like, I think if Spurs had all the success Arsenal had, they would be a bigger club.
Yeah.
And you're like, yeah, that's sort of how this works, Teddy. You're saying if one club was more successful than the other, they'll be more successful than the other. Yes.
Yeah. Charlie, did you enjoy Ozzy Ardiles and Teddy's experiences playing under him? I think my favorite bit of the book. Just the insight into them being part of the famous five.
That is just a great sort of period in Tottenham's history.
Yeah.
And yeah, he does bring it to life quite well how utterly mad that was. I mean, and who knows how much license has been taken where he talks about our dealers would just be like, it's fine, you'll work it out.
Yeah, exactly. You're all smart players, you'll figure it out. It's like, doesn't Sheringham say something like, but there's five of us up front? And he goes like, yeah, and five defenders.
And he goes, yeah, five and five. That's how this works. That's what we'll do.
There's also an amazing casual xenophobia, or maybe not even that casual, in relation to Ardiles, where he talks about Venables was replaced by Ozzy Ardiles, a rare man who transcended the antipathy still harboured by some English people for Argentinians in the years after the Falklands War.
That's so funny.
I love there how he's sort of putting that onto other people, like, not me, you understand, but... a rare man that's quite a claim that's true in the mid-90s.
Yeah, I can't think of any other famous Argentinians. Yeah,
he's such a nice guy.
Decade old.
Yeah, he gets over the fact that he's an Argentinian. you can basically forget he's Argentinian. It's amazing.
And one of the famous five is German. So yeah, very. Yeah. He's really. Yeah.
He's that rare. A rare man.
I feel like this book is very dull but very occasionally it will flirt with an interesting fact that it will kind of like be like, oh, this could be a good moment, and then just veer straight back into talking about like losing to Luton.
Yeah,
it's the most classic book for that, I would say. Like the Nicholas stuff is a good. He talks about his, you know, he has a long term relationship with with Nicola, who like they go up and down. There's a bit when they're in England when they like break up just before a really important like moment
before the Euros.
Or I think it might be before the World Cup when he has his Portuguese like his Portuguese folly as he refers to it. Like all of that stuff.
Oh, that's right. Sorry, it's before the World Cup. Yeah.
But he never really talks about it. It just sort of like will tangentially say like, oh, well, I was going through a difficult period with Nicola at the time. Anyway, or be like, we would have the lads night
that Morocco get that Morocco. Friendly was on the horizon, so that's prepared.
No, so I'm now going to explain in detail this friendly match between England and Morocco for two pages.
I mean, some of that lads trip stuff was quite funny as well. I mean, he has a really funny phrase, and he does this quite often, where I'll say like, you know, I didn't do that. Far from it, in fact. Well, it's kind of like, you sort of either did or you didn't. And he talks about cigarettes and he's like,
oh my God.
I would never smoke a cigarette. I'm actually quite against smoking. Or something like that.
I'm going to come to that later because I think it is one of the worst excuses I've ever read.
It's in anything. Amazing.
It's unbelievable, that bit. But yeah, I know. I don't think, Jack, and this is a reference you will not get, Charlie, I don't think we've had a book this formulaic just listing off fixtures quite as bad since Gary Monk's Loud, Proud and Positive.
I think that's absolutely right. I was going to say it's a Loud, Proud and Positive situation, this one. Yeah. I think it's very much like he's just going... And what's weird is that whereas Gary Monk's book, it was like, not what else are you going to write about because you're Gary Monk, because that's unfair, but Teddy has had like an incredible career. He's won the treble.
He's already been playing for like football. He's 33 or so already by the time this book comes out, maybe.
This book should be filled with great stories that are not just him like going through fixture by fixture, losing or it's infuriating. He's probably the most successful person we've ever had who has written the most boring book, I would argue.
I do think if we weren't reading this book 24 years on, and it's funny because of the sort of, you know, some of those politically incorrect gaffes, would have been extremely bland to read this contemporaneously.
And I worry that, well, not worry, I think that we've all become so...
I worry a lot about this.
I fear for Teddy,
obviously. I fear that I've become jaded with the concept of the show, and so I no longer see the gaffes as like keen. I should see the gaffes more keenly, because I was reading this being like, oh, this is boring, but you spotted all the great, hilarious things that he's done. And I'm just sort of like, well, we got to get through it, guys.
No, I did think that. I was like, this is very enjoyable, but I wouldn't want to read tons more of this kind of autobiography.
I think we haven't had one like this for quite a while. It is dry. Well, and just with a veneer of like bitterness throughout, I would say.
Good news. We're only four into the new series, so that's it. Only a few in. Guys, I'm going to move us on. Has anyone got an out of context Teddy Sheringham for us, please?
I do.
A line that they particularly enjoyed in the book.
It was a goal that my mum could have scored, to be honest. And my mum, for all her brilliance as a mother, is no international striker. Unbelievable.
That was...
Her brilliance as a mother.
Very, always kind of predicting that Harry Redknapp interview thing about Darren Bent.
Foreshadowing that.
Yeah.
Except I think what I quite like about this one, not to go too far into or out of context, not to give too much context to it, I quite like the way he's immediately backtracking, like, oh no, but she's a great mum. Don't get me wrong. She's a class 10 out of 10 mum.
For an Argentinian, she's great. Charlie, do you have an out of context?
I feel like I've read out most of my favorite ones, but this is just so stupid. This is that cigarette kind of incident. I think I was trying to put the cigarette in her ear. Silly, childish, pointless, even worse, dangerous. I plead guilty to all four. But at no point did I even try to light the cigarette. I've always been a non-smoker. I'm dead against the habit, actually. And I was hardly likely to start smoking now.
Oh, my God.
And just shortly after this, because like this is so the kind of phrasing he uses again and again. He says, the people who were quoted in the paper as saying that I was stumbling about the place and knocking over tables were, I'm sorry to say, very much mistaken. And that's being polite.
That's what I mean. There's a thin veneer of like, I could tell you stories.
Yeah.
I could tell you.
Exactly.
If you let me, I would tell you stories that would make your hair turn grey. But I won't, because I'm a gentleman.
There's another one just like that. And again, it's similar to that dozens thing where it's fairly on stage. Like, and that's the understatement of the decade.
Yeah.
He's not like, not the biggest understatement ever, not of the century. It's as if he has genuinely thought about where would I rank this in the pantheon of understatements.
Yeah.
I reckon 20 years is too much. Yeah. It's not that would be hyperbolic.
Teddy Sheringham's top 10 understatements of the decade.
There's also a bit that's similar to that where he says oh, the difference between Millwall and Manchester United is that the atmosphere when you come out to the stadium is pretty similar, except that Man United's bigger by a factor of, I would say, about 100.
Like, what a weird way of saying it. Yeah, he really
so weird. He's such a weird guy.
I've got my out of context, which is simply, I make no apologies for being an unreserved Stuart Pearce fan. There we go. is my one.
And let me tell you, I closed the book as soon as I read this. I was like, wow. If we're going to be an apologist for Stuart Pearce.
I know that. I found that, again, like the Les Ferdinand thing, I found that quite a funny straw man. Like, who are all these people hating Stuart Pearce? Especially in 99. I feel like his popularity adored. Would have been sky high.
Definitely.
It's so funny.
Some people, and he says, like, some people, which is interesting actually, he talks about like celebration policing. He says like some people had, you know, didn't like Stuart Pearce celebrating that penalty. I don't remember that at all. I remember everyone absolutely loving it.
Yeah.
Very
and
odd. Also like why focus on those people? It's so weird.
That is true. Yeah.
Just why bring them up? It's your book and you're like, I'm gonna focus on the people who got annoyed at Stuart Pearce for celebrating too much.
He's imagined Stuart Pearce haters.
He's dedicated it to them at the beginning of the book. all right, time for a break, but we'll have more of Teddy afterwards as we talk Teddy's inspirations and World Cup 98 scandal. Hello, James here, and we at Football Book Club want you. That's right, you, to join something special, something exclusive. We want you to join the Football Book Club Club. The Football Book Club Club is the home of even more Football Book Club action, and now it's cheaper than ever to become a full member at just £3.50 a month. There's three tiers. By signing up to our Bookworm tier, you get an exclusive members-only episode of Football Book Club every fortnight, filling the gap between regular episodes with more book club fun and, frankly, a frighteningly deeper analysis of whatever book we're reading in the episode. Plus, you get access to all the bonus episodes recorded so far. There's over 20 of them on there. Well, 20. And most excitingly, you'll get your hands on a special edition Money Can't Buy bookmark you can put inside your personal copy of Darren Huckabee's Hucks. All that for just £3.50 a month. For context, that's a tenth of the cost of a cameo message from Ian Dowie. And a cameo is what, 30 seconds? For that price, you get 10 episodes. That's 3.5 hours of content. I dread to think what you have to pay to get 3.5 hours of content from Ian Dowie. You'd have to remortgage your house. But I digress. And if that's still not right for you, if you really love the show, you can join the Super Bookworm tier. And if you like the show but don't want to pay that much, you can support the show for just £1 a month on the Casual Reader tier. You won't get the bonus episodes, but yes, you will get that bookmark. Head to patreon.com/footballbookclub for more details. So if you enjoy the show, please consider joining up. It really does help us to keep making the show, because books don't grow on trees. But they are trees, kind of. And trees are expensive. But the Football Book Club isn't. So join today at patreon.com/footballbookclub or by following the link in the episode notes. See you back at the clubhouse.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends.
For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hello everyone, I'm Adam Hurry and welcome to the new home of the Football Clichés podcast. It's a truly unique show about the language of football and all the tiny things we take for granted about it. You might not think you care about what makes a stadium a cauldron, how many words commentators have to describe pace, or which players can be called a Rolls Royce, but trust us, you will care. We'll be diving deep into football's absurd little patterns twice a week. The adjudication panel will run the rule over the latest crimes against football language, we'll select yet another niche 11, and star guests will be dropping in to choose their obscure footballing loves and hates for Mesut Haaland dicks. Plus, there's the mighty Football Clichés quiz title up for grabs, the greatest football quiz in existence. Subscribe now so our first episode downloads automatically on Tuesday the 17th of October. Whisper it quietly, but the Football Clichés podcast is back.
Welcome back to Football Book Club, where we are still reading Teddy Sheringham's Teddy with Charlie Eccleshare.
Yay!
Still enjoying it, Charlie? Not the podcast,
very
the
much
book.
So, yeah.
The book.
Yeah,
that's
yeah,
more the question, both. I guess. Okay. Good to hear. Good to hear. Jack, I believe you had a little topic you want to bring up.
Yeah, I find this book very hard to read. I'm currently raising my 7-week old child. She's currently waking up all through the night, and like we have to stay up to 2 or 3 in the morning. And I am often like, oh, while I'm looking after her, I'll try and read this. I have fallen asleep legitimately within 5 minutes of reading this book every single time I've opened this book the past like 2 weeks, and it's been a real struggle to get through because it's so dry and so tedious. But I do find one aspect of, and I think it's similar to what you found, Charlie, with the sort of like the exaggerating like the, you know, the factor of 100 thing, or like the understatement of the decade. It's he talks about quite a lot of the time moments where he feels really down or really like I couldn't get through it, I didn't know what to do, but then I received an inspirational speech from an unexpected source. And to a man, all of these speeches are from like previous like pundits, or they are like from coaches, and every single one of them is basically just, you're right, Teddy. How's it going? And Teddy's like, not well. And they go, well, you should keep at it. And he's like, I took that to heart that day. It's so weird.
But maybe that's an insight into, you know, what football was like back then. Because I think he says something like when he says, you know, when I got my first England cap or something, I was made up, but I couldn't show it.
I couldn't show it.
The lads would have killed me or something.
Oh, yeah.
It's so weird. I do. It reminds me a bit of, there's a thing on Twitter, there's a tweet stuck with me because I worry I've internalized it, where it's like people who, boys in particular, or men who have made it part of their identity, a compliment they got offhandedly from someone 10 years ago, and
yeah,
based their entire personality around that compliment. And it's very much something where I'm like, oh god, what if that happened with me in comedy? But like, I do think there's a similar thing with that, where he's like, I can't show anyone that I'm excited or happy or any point, and that also conversations that there's a bit, it's basically Martin Tyler, that's the one I find really weird. In like the run-up to the 99 treble winning thing, he's injured and he's like, oh gosh, I don't think I'm, you know, I'm not going to get back into the team. And then I had a conversation with Martin Tyler, and Martin Tyler literally says, oh, you'll probably be okay. just keep playing football. And he and
Tyler says something like, it's a long season, Teddy. You know, I'm sure. Like, sure, you'll get some games.
Everyone will get a go. Everyone will get a go.
Like, Teddy, you've been in football for so long. You've been a footballer for 32 years. Has no one ever just said, like, you'll be all right? Like,
what's quite sweet as well is he obviously is really touched by the fact that Alan Shearer is an advocate of his.
Yes.
And so he quite often refers to the fact that, like, even if Alan wouldn't say it, everyone sort of knew that he found me his best strike partner.
Definitely.
And stuff.
Yeah,
and that he picks up on, like, interviews. Like, he's internalized an interview where, like, he says, like, Michael Owen's got a lot of pace, but Teddy Sheringham can see what's going, where everything's going. As if, like, and it's like, oh, have you really taken that to heart? And it's nice that he's taken it to heart, but also, like, oh, buddy. Mm. Buddy, are you so starved of affection that that's what's happened here? It happens again, like, when he's playing, I think when he's playing for Millwall.
Okay.
Basically, he literally says, like, I was seriously began to doubt that I would make it in football. My saviour was Roger Cross, the Millwall youth team manager, who told me, like I said to him one day, I didn't know where I was going. People were playing me offside and I wasn't getting involved in games. He said, not to worry, I was doing all right. That's his saviour! His saviour says, not to worry, you're doing all right. That changed his life.
But Jack, you haven't mentioned the other person at Millwall.
Oh my God, I'm getting to him.
Okay. Who goes Steve Harrison. Who goes totally the other way around of doing it. Like, if anything, is too enthusiastic about Teddy. Intensely enthusiastic.
Steve Harrison is incredible. But then I also, so Brice Rioch, towards the end of Teddy's time at Millwall, Bruce Rioch and Steve Harrison come into the team to manager, and Steve Harrison is one of the weirdest people we've ever had in any of these books. And he says I've got a mantra for you, Teddy, and I might just have to read the entire mantra because I find it so strange.
It's page 102, just in case.
Page 102. Yeah, here we go. He says he coached me using a very subtle technique. that didn't fall far short of brainwashing. I'd be sitting in the dressing room before a game and he would get alongside me, muttering, urging, cajoling, drilling his words quietly but insistently, repetitively into my ear. And I was at this point, I was like, okay, this is going to be some great advice. It'll be some, like, really clever, like, technique or moving, and it's
yeah,
come on, I want another goal from you. And once you got one, I want two. Come on, don't let it slip now. I want you buzzing. Get up for it. There's another couple of goals here for you. Look at the heights you can reach. I want you back in there. Come on, give me another goal.
It's a bit sexy. It's a bit sexy, isn't it?
I'm going to get right in your ear and say, I want you to score goals.
I want another one.
But, like, he's not giving any insight into how a striker should perform. Steve Harrison is basically just saying,
score more.
Would you mind scoring some goals?
And I was, he got to the point where I could hardly hear what he was saying.
I just closed my eyes and I was just hearing it.
Why did it get to that point? How did it get to that point? But I knew without having to listen.
What was he doing to, like, the other 10 people in the changing room? Were they just like, you're like the assistant manager, right?
Yeah.
When we got one game over, he would be on at me again immediately for the next one. It was incessant, but it was great.
It is so weird. It is very intense, and, like,
he's being harassed.
It is. I mean, I do like the idea of imagining, like, just the defenders next to him being like, "What is Steve doing? why is Steve so into this?"
I mean, the next page as well is there's just so much great sort of football chat. He talks. I mean, the wording here, he's talking about Newcastle. He says they love their soccer on the banks of the Tyne. It really is a hotbed of the game up there.
Oh, such a hotbed of the game
of soccer. I can fully understand. I can fully understand why players who've worn the famous black and white stripes always retain a soft spot for the club. You get the same sort of buzz when you put on that magic red shirt at Manchester United.
Not Spurs, though. Yeah, doesn't there's say another it United. For Spurs.
We don't wear a red shirt. Could be that.
Magic or otherwise.
Yeah. Probably is that. I mean, Steve's also a weird guy because he... He says that, like, so Bruce was, like, the hard man and Steve was, like, the joker. And Steve's jokes were they would go to team hotels and he would load up his tray with food at the at the canteen.
Yeah.
And then he would be walking out, and then he would trip over, and his meal would go everywhere. And the hotel staff would like lift him up and be like, "Are you all right?" And he's like, "Yeah, yeah, I'm fine." And he would do this at every hotel they would go to.
And also,
as if it's a great prank.
And Teddy, without fail, every time loses his shit at that prank. He finds it so funny when people fall over. He does it quite a lot in the book.
He says Steve would launch a stage wink in our direction after he'd fallen over, as if to say, "Got him again, lads. How are you getting him? You're just falling over."
Have I imagined he does that at a cinema as well, somewhere with popcorn? No. Is that somewhere else? Is that someone else?
No, that's someone else. That's actually, I think that's, is that Gazza? I think that's Gazza in another book. Gazza. Yeah.
Oh, it's another book. Yeah. He does exactly
I think it might be Rob Lee in Gazza's book. Yeah. But there's another bit where he's saying they're doing like a, they're doing a team run. And he says, Steve suddenly fell over and started rolling down the hill. He thought he'd have to stop rolling in a minute, but no, he just kept on tumbling, finally dribbling into the lake. We fell about. At what
and
point
would
they
again.
Be like, yeah, we should just be like, yeah. Oh, it's not a bit. He's really injured. So weird.
We should get Steve Harrison's autobiography next. That's what we should do. I never heard
non-stop
of Steve Harrison.
Pranks.
Yeah,
non-stop.
My life
non-stop.
In pranking.
It'll be 50% pranks and 50% just go on, read another page. I know you can do it. Good. Just read another page. Oh, yeah. Once you've read one page, I want you to read another page.
In the end, I had to stop reading. I knew what was going to be said without even reading.
I want to talk about England. We've mentioned them a little bit. We've mentioned how Teddy is a proud patriot, quite a lot in the book. He cries at the national anthem. I don't think we mentioned that. He says he had to stop singing it because every time he was crying too much, which I don't remember ever seeing. Not to like hold him up on that, but I don't remember ever really seeing an England player crying at the national anthem. So
I also like the idea that if I sang it, I'd start crying it is a very odd thing.
Right.
Like, wouldn't singing it stop you from crying? I don't know. It doesn't quite like match up for me. I've never seen an England player singing and crying at the same time.
I imagine he's like that North Korean guy in 2008. No, 2010. 2010 World
Cup. Sobbing, yeah.
Yeah. Very much so. That.
I mean, I have to say the England stuff, I was right to be skeptical about how interesting the Euro 96 stuff would be because I've heard it so many times.
Yeah.
But what was more interesting was the 98 World Cup because he was so peripheral. And obviously you kind of forget about him even being there because that World Cup was all about Michael Owen. And it is funny, just on the sort of axis to grind, he clearly hates the fact that Owen's taken his place. And there's this constant begrudging sort of...
I am so glad you mentioned that. I think there is so much thinly veiled hatred of Michael Owen. It's absolutely incredible.
It's so funny.
He comes like you say when you mentioned Alan Shearer earlier, Charlie, with how it's like, oh, Alan Shearer always says he'd rather play with me, that kind of thing. He describes Owen as good, but you know he's one to watch. But you know he's not me. He's not me. He's one to watch. Like maybe you'll get there at some point.
No excuse. No substitute for experience.
Message. Exactly. I know. Obviously, should we get to the cigarettes that we were talking about earlier? That's probably worthwhile bringing up there. It was page 248. So obviously at this point.
Yeah, what's that? Portuguese Follies, that chapter is.
Yes.
He loves saying follies, by the way, I say. Aussie also has a lot of follies.
He says, so obviously Owen is like the up-and-coming, new hope for England. At that point, he's kind of on the edge of the team. He's been taken to the training camp. But currently Teddy's, his position's okay in the England starting lineup. And then they have the summer before. They basically said, like, don't get into trouble because everyone's going to be watching you. Just don't get into trouble. So what does Teddy do? Immediately gets into trouble. by
going to a golf holiday with the lads in Portugal.
Yeah, and getting smashed in Portugal.
There's a hilarious bit as well with that where he gets really sort of preoccupied with the timings of it.
Oh my
he makes
God,
the point that we may have been out at 2 a.m., but actually we'd woken up at midday. So he's basically saying that 2 a.m. is very deceptive because when you wake up that late, you know, everything was later and we weren't golfing till later, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
And he has this amazing phrase where he says, we would have been up for the same amount of time if we'd gone to bed at 11 o'clock on the Monday night, played golf during the day, then eating and done our modest bit of clubbing in the evening.
modest bit of clubbing.
It's just an amazing way of describing going, did you go out last night? I mean, a modest bit of clubbing, but you know, nothing.
Modest session at Tiger. Yeah.
A humble bit of clubbing.
Certainly.
A dash of clubbing.
I also, like, as an argument to be like, oh, sure, I was up at 6:30, but, like, I'd woken late is not good argument, especially if you're going to play a World Cup in, like, a week's time. So that's not... The Sun aren't going to be like, sorry, guys. He was up at 6:30 in the morning, but he only woke up at 12, so it's fine.
But the thing that gets him in trouble is this cigarette photo, like you said. So he... And, like, I think this book is written for one reason, because, like you said earlier, Alan Sugar... didn't want Teddy to talk about what really happened at Spurs and stuff like that. And so Teddy was like, well, I'm going to write this book. And the second reason is pretty much just to, like, put this story to bed.
Set the record straight.
With the most made up, nonsensical thing I've ever heard.
Absolute lie.
When the incriminating photo was taken, I was talking to a girl at the nightclub. I had already posed winningly for lots of pictures with holidaymakers in the karaoke bar. And there were any number of witnesses who could confirm that at that time I was not even close to being drunk. The girl I was chatting to had a cigarette in her hand and was about to light it. So the photo is of him smoking, they think, right? The girl I was chatting to had a cigarette in her hand and was about to light it. Her friend said she would like a shot of her. So I said, okay, give me a fag then, and stuck it unlit into my mouth to pose for the picture. Just nonsense.
What? Oh, well, if you've got a cigarette, I must have a cigarette. Yeah. Otherwise, the photo won't be symmetrical.
I must have a cigarette in my photo.
This will be a great photo. The reason it's funny is because I shouldn't be holding a cigarette, but I will be holding a cigarette. That's why it's funny.
And then you've got all the things that Charlie mentioned. So, you know, I'm against smoking. I don't do it. I was hardly like to start smoking now. I was acting like a kid, but I was playing it strictly for laughs. I did have a few glasses of beer, but not that many. A glass of beer.
A simple glass of beer. Some modest clubbing and a glass of beer.
And an unlit cigarette. What a night. The people who were quoted in the paper saying I was stumbling around the place and knocking over tables were, I'm very sorry to say, very much mistaken. That's being polite. I did see a couple of reporters in the hotel trying to drum up a story, but I wasn't worried as there wasn't much of a story to be had. Nonsense. If that's the excuse he's cooked up, like a year later in this revised edition, what was the point?
My biggest crime in the whole sorry affair was, I think, to have been a bit naive.
Mate, come on. I think what it suffers from is the fact that it says, like, the way he structured it is like, the photo was there and it looks really bad, and I know it looks really bad, and my agent was like, oh my god, it looks really bad, what have you done? But when I explained it to my agent, he was like, that makes sense. And then I explained to someone else and they said, you know what, that makes sense. And then he does the explanation, because that makes his agent look like a fucking idiot.
Yeah, I was gonna say, look, it made sense to them, so if it doesn't make sense to you guys, then clearly you're stupid. It's been confirmed that the story makes sense.
He sort of builds up this idea where he's like, guys, what you're about to hear is going to be one of the most credible excuses you've ever heard. Two separate people have said it is a very credible excuse. And then he comes out with, I thought the photo would look wrong if I didn't have a cigarette.
Really, really weird. And then, of course, Owen takes his place. Well, not quite. Well, Sheeran's kind of on thin ice, isn't he? And then doesn't really play well in the first couple of games. Owen comes in, and then the worst thing happens. Owen has a great World Cup. And
God, it's terrible.
Yeah, Sheringham's kind of he's like, yeah, I'm delighted for him. He does say that a few times. We're all made up for Michael, I think he says a couple of times.
Gritted teeth.
Yeah, hugely gritted.
I'm not sure he actually says this, but it's along the lines of, you wouldn't find a happier person for him than me. Just one of those throwaway lines. Yeah. Like, I'm just really sure that's not the case.
I was happy to the factor of 100.
Yeah, but no one
and
was more
polite.
Those sort of claims. No one was more supportive of his teammates than me. Just sort of like unarguable claim.
There is a bit where he seems to really focus on, and I think this is part of the It's either a character flaw on his part, or he has been like hounded by the press that makes him think that he should like answer back to these people. But there's a bit where he's like, they apparently saw me laughing on the bench when we were down to 10 men and tried to make a story out of it. But actually, if you watch when Alan Shearer scored, I was the first one off the bench celebrating. But they didn't mention that. Yeah, because man celebrates teammate scoring goal is not, it's not going to be.
And the reason I had a cigarette in my mouth was because Paul Merson had one next to me on the bench.
Oh my god, he also says like at the time, he says like, what kind of thing there, that story requires no explanation, and I'm not even going to dignify it with a response, but what I will say is that I was telling Steve McManaman a small joke.
Yeah. In this instance, the press were right. I was laughing. Is that a crime to have a laugh? Oh,
I was laughing, sure. I was having a little joke with my friend Steve McManaman. But I told my agent about it, and he said that is a credible excuse for why you were laughing.
And then after 98, the book kind of comes to an end around that point. I've noticed, though, by the way, we haven't actually talked about the treble. Winning the treble.
It's because...
Yeah,
it's such a weirdly structured book. This
Agreed.
One because clearly,
Agreed.
Yeah,
clearly
and I think the added chapters probably doesn't help.
No,
yeah, with that,
it's a mess. I would say
that goes to the front, which makes sense
because obviously that's what you want to read. But you have to really, and I think this is a problem with Teddy's whole like position and his whole identity in this. Within this book and also within football, this book needs to be written at the end of his career so he could look back and go, okay, this is my story. And I can have it defined by the treble, but putting the treble at the top makes no sense if the rest of your book is about like so close but so far, because there's bits at the end where he's like, who can say if anyone will ever win the treble, and then like he says like a sentence later there's Cleveland adds in, we did later. You're like, oh god, but
later that year.
it's such a strange, disorientating book for
but
that
you, I mean, it is mad to think of this book without that addendum. Would have ended with the 98 World Cup.
Yeah,
basically,
yeah.
You know, Portuguese follies would have been the
would have been the defining issue. You'd yeah, be like, who is reading this book?
I guess it would have been like maybe in the previous version. It was like, oh, now my first year at United didn't start off well, but my second one will be good, and then
he is right. Well, actually, he's true. Not because it's sort of true, isn't it? Because
he's not really in the team for the first half of the season. Yeah, yeah.
That's what's weird about this book again is that like it starts with the treble, and I was like, okay, so it's going to be, you know, my success story, but actually the majority of that chapter is him being like, God, I was injured and I hated
hated that season.
It was terrible. I guess I did score the winner in the, I was the man of the match in the FA Cup final, and I did score the equaliser in the Champions League final, but otherwise it was a terrible year.
He also makes a pretty outrageous claim. He tries to suggest that the Solskjaer goal might have been going in.
Oh yeah.
Just sort of casually, it's like,
It wasn't going in. I've seen that goal many times. It was no way it was going
I want to watch it back now because it feels like it's obviously not challenged, because obviously who's going to challenge him? It's his own autobiography. But
this is a good way to actually end it. This is a better ending than the book has. This is a Charlie challenging whether Teddy could have had a brace in the Champions League final.
I'm going to watch this back now because in my mind, it's very much a flick on.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I've never seen any suggestion that
that Solskjaer is just like putting the ball back.
David Nugent did it. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think.
How dare you? So let me see. No, that is never going in. It's not even going on target, and there's a man on the line, even if it was.
I feel like that goal is burned into my brain. And
I mean, fair play to him. It's a great flick. You know,
it's great.
It's a great assist. Yeah. But there's something, and he's always like, yeah, you know, I think he might phrase it as, you know, that some suggested it might have been going to get another. It's like, no, they didn't. You're suggesting
some suggested
that.
While saying that Stuart Pearce had over-celebrated the penalty. Because also, like, I would argue, I mean, Ryan Giggs
is
shocked.
Listen, I'm not going to hold it against Ollie. Yeah. You know, he deserved that. I was happier for him than anyone. Yeah.
No one was happier for him than I was. There is one bit of the treble that really makes me laugh, where he describes the football pitch of the new camp as his temporary workspace.
Oh yeah, he does something similar to that.
He's ahead of his time.
He does that as well. He says,
"Is it the big green dance floor?"
He says, "When they trot onto that big rectangular dance floor, they are the ones who must follow the right steps." What?
What the fuck are you talking about? Just say pitch. Fine.
Should we start the podcast again? Should we start again with the first chapter? Yeah. Did this book change you, Charlie?
Look, fundamentally,
as
a person, probably not.
Okay.
I'm not sure if it changed my perception too much of Teddy Sheringham. Mm. He kind of was exactly as I would imagine him to be in this book.
Yeah, I agree with that. That's
I've always thought he's had a bit of an edge to him. You know, he's not, he's clearly not someone who's, you know, nicely.
Mm-hmm.
So it proved in this book. But I enjoyed it and I found it very comical in parts.
Has it made you want to go on and read more football autobiographies? Am I right in thinking that I could have totally imagined this, but Adam, your Football Clichés co-host, came on and did Andy Gray's book with us. Am I right in thinking he gave you that for Secret Santa?
He did. Amazingly, it was the odds of him getting me were so low. I mean, it was a company-wide Secret Santa.
Yeah, yeah.
Probably would have been 100 people involved in this, and he drew me, and obviously he was absolutely delighted. And he gave me Grey Matters for Secret Santa. I have skimmed through bits of it.
Oh.
There are some bits that kind of foreshadow some of the bad things that are going to happen.
Very much. I would agree with that.
We inexplicably have read two Andy Gray autobiographies.
Yeah.
Oh, what's the other one called? Is there another Gray Areas? No Gray Areas or something?
Yeah, that is it, I think.
Is it Shades of Gray? No, it's not Shades of Gray.
It is Shades of Gray.
Okay.
Which you obviously
so much to work with.
Yeah.
Is it Shades of... I can't remember what it is.
I think it is Shades
of Gray. Yeah, I think it is Shades of Gray as well. Yeah, no Gray Areas would be a good name for it. But I'm glad it kind of changed your life a little bit. And it got, I think. Score out of 10, Charlie?
It's very difficult because it's kind of relative to, you know, am I comparing it to fine works of literature? Or,
yes.
You know?
Yeah.
Yes, you are.
Yeah. Okay. 9. No. I'll give it a 6.
Okay.
There's also a bit where he talks just on that at ratings. He says something like, and the newspapers seem to think I'd done all right or something. Or they gave me decent ratings for my performances as well, which I thought was quite quaint.
Yes.
A lot of players talk about their ratings.
Yeah, that is true.
Yeah. Which is weird.
I remember speaking to Stephen Carr about this and him saying, like, yeah, we were, you know, some of the players were so into it, it actually affected their performances because they just wanted to show off and get good ratings rather than doing the best thing for the team.
Is that a bit like FIFA ratings these days?
I was going to say,
footballers love doing that on social media now, you know, going like, oh, I can't believe they gave me 70 for pace or whatever like that. Yeah, and it's all the Spurs players kind of sharing it around with themselves. It's interesting. Huh. Yeah, that is a good point. That is a real throwback to that. And Darren Huckabee, in his book, talks about how he went on to write match reviews after he retired. But that was...
Yeah,
just for fun. Just decided to do. Jack, your score out of 10?
3.
Oh.
But I'm very tired.
Right. I think, Charlie, am I right in thinking you've also had a child recently?
Not recently.
Okay.
Yeah,
Jack, you shouldn't be so tired.
No,
Charlie looks very fresh.
I do empathize with Jack. My youngest is a year, coming up to a year.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Oh, but, congratulations.
I was going to say the idea of reading this in that kind of sleep deprived state. I can see why it was quite soporific.
I woke up to her crying and I had the book over my face and I was like, oh no, this. Oh God.
Jack, just to remind you, you've got to read Theo Walcott's by Tuesday. I'm gonna give this boring score straight down the middle, 5. I enjoyed it a bit. So that's 14 divided by 3.66. No, 4.66.
No, 4.66.
Yeah.
Cool. All right. Good.
Okay, where does that put it on the leaderboard?
That puts it 0.09 behind Asamoah Gyan when we had 4 people reading it. It's just above Ashley Cole this series, and it's way behind our best ever. Darius Purcell, which I think got perfect 10. But beyond that,
Darius Purcell did get a perfect 10, and he deserved it.
He did. It's time for a quiz. Charlie, you're good at quizzes. Remember, on a football cliches quiz. Very
I'm
good.
No stranger to a quiz.
You're no stranger to a quiz. Charlie, call out your names when I ask the question. So for this quiz, Charlie, you're Teddy Bear, and Jack, you're Danny Bear. Okay, call it out when you're ready. Number one, who reinvented coaching in Britain by studying American football and baseball?
Danny Bear.
Yep.
Not Danny Bear. Steve McLaren?
Steve McLaren is correct.
Oh, yeah.
Good work. Yeah, he watched some games and they did that. Number two, how old is Teddy when he meets his first Northerner?
Teddy Bear, 19?
Close. Close.
Danny Bear, 25.
Oh, okay. I'm going to give it to Jack, 24.
24.
And it is your friend of mine, Steve Harrison, apparently. Yeah.
He does say, like, I met this strange thing called a Northerner.
Yeah, it's like everything he says, he's laughing about for weeks. Like, yeah. After that.
All Northerners like to fall over into their food.
Yeah. Question number three. It's a sad question. Who was sadder about not making the World Cup 98 squad? Ian Walker or Nicky Butt?
Teddy Bear.
Yep.
Ian Walker, because Nicky Butt sort of saw it coming.
Yes.
I remember thinking that was, he was almost ranking them at that point. He was like, well, obviously Gaz is at the top, and then Walker.
Yeah.
Poor Andy Hinchcliffe only gets a mention in passing in the list of players who was cut from the 29.
I forgot about Hinchcliffe. Wow.
Hinchcliffe, Dublin, a few others.
Yeah, Phil Neville.
Phil Neville, of course.
Phil Neville, yeah.
He was very upset. Because apparently John Gorman told him he'd be in.
We've read his autobiography and he didn't.
Well, we read his joint autobiography with Gary Neville.
Which is... The joint autobiography when it comes to the World Cup is one of the funniest things ever, because Gary Neville's like playing against Tunisia, playing against this, playing against Argentina, and Phil Neville's like opening a school fete.
Question number four. Name any of the things Teddy would like to do after he retires.
Oh, Danny Bear. He wants to have Christmas in the Caribbean.
Yep, okay, that's one.
And he wants to go skiing.
Okay, all right. Yeah, fine. He wants to go skiing.
There we go.
Time. Can you remember what the third one is?
Golf? Is it related to golf in some way?
Not really, no.
All I remember is he finishes it by saying, and about 100 other things.
Oh, yeah, he does say that. You can get an extra point for that.
He chooses the most boring things. And he's like, and also about 100 other things, I guess.
The third thing he references is be a better dad to his son. What's something like that. And finally, I'll give you that really tough question. What was the name of Millwall's tea lady? This is hard. He name references her.
Is it a good name?
It's a classic tea lady name.
Is it Sharon?
Too many letters, I'm afraid. It's three letters. I think it's
Pat.
It's close. It's three letters.
Jan.
Not Pat, not Jan. It's an abbreviated name.
Pat.
Pam.
The answer, L, begins with L.
Lynn.
Lil is the answer.
Lil.
Lil.
L-I-L. Lil. So there we go.
The French team.
Jack, you are the victor for this. Jack, do you want your Kenzong?
Yeah, that's my prize, isn't it?
So Charlie, this bit will make no sense to you whatsoever. But we have a friend on the show who sends in football chants for long-since retired footballers every episode. And this season he's taking requests. We've had a very Spurs-heavy episode. So to balance it out, Matthew on Instagram has requested a song for this 90s/noughties Derby and Arsenal goalkeeper. I think there's probably only one who fits that Venn diagram. So here we go. To the tune of the Wenger Boys, boom, 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 boom.
Okay, yeah.
Oh, I hate having to do this in front of guests. It's the most tragic moment of the show. Whoa, just that when you think you're through, your trouble's just begun. Whoa, one-on-one, just him and you. Poom, 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 he wants the ball from you. They're meant to be together between his hands forever. Boom, 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 you're gonna go boom, boom. We keep clean sheets forever together with Mark Poom. oh, it was hard to get
very
through.
Nice.
Thank you very much. He actually had an alternative.
Don't encourage him.
He had an alternative line as opposed to Between His Hands Forever, which was his hands gripping the leather, which I was very keen to put in, but I didn't. That is all for this week's episode, but we'll be back in a fortnight. If you can't wait that long, join the Book Club Club on Patreon. Bookworm members of the club get a bonus chapter episode every other week where we chat even more about the book. It's $3.50 to join, or you can just support us for a quid. Head to patreon.com/footballbookclub. In the meantime, do get in touch with us at Footy Book Club on Twitter, at Football Book Club on Instagram. Send us your thoughts or your puns, your Ken Zong requests. Thanks, everyone. And Charlie, thank you so much for coming on. We had such a great time with you, and thank you for reading that ridiculous book for us. Yeah. That was super kind of you to do so. Tell us about your book.
Well, my book is called The Beautiful Poetry of Football Commentary, and it is breaking down famous bits of commentary and sort of applying a sort of analysis to them as if they were poems or speeches or this sort of thing. So it kind of combines my love of football and oratory and rhetoric and that sort of thing. So yeah, it's good fun. It came out almost exactly this time last year.
Oh, okay.
Over a year ago. And it's available in all your usual places that you would go to for books.
Make sure you go out and buy it.
That sounds great. That sounds too good for this podcast.
Yeah, yeah, I agree. Is there anything else?
Look, it's no Teddy, but no,
it's is there anything else you wanted to plug at all, Charlie?
No, not really. You said at the start, my written work's on The Athletic, and you can listen to me on various other podcasts that you mentioned at the top. So yeah, please do so.
Brilliant. Thank you so much for coming on, Charlie. It's been so much fun.
No, thank you for having me. I really enjoyed it.
Brilliant.
Ah,
brilliant.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Goodbye, everyone.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to Football Book Club. It featured James Bug, Jack Bernhardt, and Charlie Eccleshare. It was created and produced by James Bug. Thanks to Teddy for writing the book. But where are they all now? Well, Teddy continued playing for another decade before following in his hero Glenn Hoddle's footsteps and doing a modest bit of managing. Michael Owen has also since retired, but he gazumped Teddy once again in 2002 by getting further than him dressed up as a donut on The Masked Singer. Steve Harrison is now banned from all canteens across the country for excessive dropping things hilariously. Alan Sugar is still playing hardball over Teddy's contract and considering offering him a one-year extension age 57. And Jerry Francis is very much grumbling about the increase in household bills. The music Hills Behind is the work of Silent Partner and is used on a Creative Commons 4.0 basis. We'll be back in a fortnight. Until then, bye-bye.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.